We're taping the call so that you guys can, some you and your friends can download it if you want to, if you know anyone that is going to miss the call today. So I apologize in advance. Like I said, I've got a little bit of a cold, so I'll so I apologize if I sound a little hoarse. But let's jump in. I loved this book, and obviously many of you on the call or some of you on the call love it too. I got a lot of emails. Dale Scott, who I think is the head of the, I don't know if he's the Southeast ICSE. I know many of you know Dale Scott. He wrote me and said he couldn't be on the call, but it was one of the best books on marketing he's ever read, and then he keeps it on his bookshelf to reread it every once in a while. And Adam Ifshin, the CEO of DLC out of New York, said he considers this a must-read for all new leasing agents. And when they hire leasing agents, they give a copy of this book to them. So I hope you guys had a chance to read it. I tell you that you don't have to read the book. I would highly recommend that you guys get this one and keep it, because there's different chapters you can pick up. For example, Conference Commandos, The Power of the Gatekeeper. There's just certain things in this book that you can refer back to over the years. I know I definitely will do it. So let's jump in. We've got 6 weeks till the Orlando ICSE, and hopefully some of you have started doing your conference prep if you're going to the conference. But on page 16, he talks about, and you know, we've heard this theme again and again in many of the books this year, about networking is about helping people. And there's a line in here that I liked. It said, the more people you help, the more help you'll have. And the more help you'll have helping others. It's like the internet. The more people who have access and use it, the more valuable the internet becomes. I thought that was a great quote and so true. And I find that in my own career, even after doing this 25 years, the more people I meet, the more resources, the more people I meet and the more people I help, the more resources I have available to me. And he talks later about career karma, which we'll talk about. So some of you who know me talk about canvassing karma. And in this book, you know, you can imagine how much I loved it when I read about career karma. And on page 19, he talks about, he didn't understand networking in the beginning, and he thought that, or no, he was talking about a guy in his life, and he said his statement flew in the face of everything I knew. He thought of relationships as finite, like a pie that can only be cut in so many pieces. Take a piece away, and there was that much less for him. He said, I knew, however, that relationships are more like muscles. The more you work them, the stronger they become. And I know a lot of the guys on this call work out, and so I know you guys can appreciate and relate to that. So the more you work on your relationships, and the more, like later on in the book, he talks about pinging our relationships, the broader the relationship and the network goes, and the more return, the more help in advancing your career. He talks about this friend David. He said David kept score. You know, we shouldn't be keeping score. We should be always looking to help others, and then that career karma will come back. He talks about Miracle-Gro, how contribute. He says give your time, your money, and your expertise to your growing community of friends. It's like a Miracle-Gro for networking, and I like that. And I know all of you, anyone that read the book, when we got to chapter 3 and it talked about goal setting, you probably were rolling your eyes because you're sick and tired of hearing me say that. But he says, every successful person I've met shared in varying degrees a zeal, that's me, for goal setting. You know, goal setting and list making. If any of you know me personally or closely, you know I'm a big goal setter and list maker. And he said his dad used to say, no one becomes an astronaut by accident. So my little boy, my 8-year-old Mario, says that he wants to go to Mars and Jupiter. And I said, well, you better start working now. So no one becomes an astronaut by accident. On page 28, they talk about the same thing on the goals. He says, human ambitions are like Japanese carp. They grow proportional to the size of their environment. Our achievements grow according to the size of our dreams and the degree to which we are in touch with our mission. I love that. So goals and ambitions expand to however the thought that you have them and your desire and ability to execute them. On page 50, I jump ahead. And again, those of you that know me know I'm a big, this is something that when I see you at conferences, I say, you know, that I don't like when you guys are all hanging, when sometimes we hang out with people that we know. And he says that sticking to the people we already know is tempting behavior. But unlike some forms of dating, a networker isn't looking to achieve an only single successful union. Creating an enriching circle of trusted relationships requires one to get out there in the mix all the time. So going forward, you know, in 6 weeks we're going to be at the biggest conference, for those of you that are on the call from Florida, that we participate in. I mean, Vegas is great, but Florida is what it's all about. Once a year, we have 6 weeks to prepare for that once-a-year conference, which is so, so, so important. So have a goal for yourself for the conference. You know, if you want to meet 3 people, if you want to meet 10 people, I mean, sometimes people say, oh, you know, I'm so disappointed that Vegas isn't 40,000 people anymore. It's only 20,000. And I always joke, I only need 3. I only need 3 good meetings. So, but make sure that when you're there, it's so tempting, and I fall into the habit as well, you know, especially after a long day of working the booth or going to meetings and going to sessions, it's so easy to just walk into a cocktail party and go, oh, I know you, and then hang and talk to that person. But, you know, you can, it's okay to have a wingman, and if you want to walk in with someone, but reach out and try to meet new people, because that's what we're all there for to do and not stick with the people that we already know. On page 55, he talks about when you are trying to get, he tells a story about someone that he's trying to get a meeting with. And I loved this thing that he said. He said, with an open-ended suggestion or question, you invite the person to work toward a meeting with you. I didn't insist on a specific lunch date at a specific time with Phil. I left it open. And I didn't allow our first exchange to be weighted down by an unnecessary obligation. And I thought that was great. You know, sometimes, you know, he talks about in his book that he was an egomaniac in the beginning and just went hard charging, and he learned that he had to step back a little bit. And I think that sometimes, you know, our bosses are, you know, get the appointments, get the cards, get the da-da-da. But I think it's important that charm has to come into it, and when we meet someone for the first time, we have to be, you know, interested in them and asking them questions and certainly walk away. Hopefully they'll remember you. He talks about how he leaves, possibly he meets someone in a session. He's sitting next to them. He goes into the next session while he's waiting for the session to begin. Maybe he types out a quick email on his BlackBerry, you know, it was great meeting you. I'll follow up next week for us to have a lunch or a meeting. But to pin someone down in the first exchange, he calls that, you know, don't let the first exchange be weighted down by an unnecessary obligation. I thought that was interesting. On page 59, he talks about the wandering eye routine, you know, and we've talked about that before as well. The quickest way to lose respect of the people that you're meeting with at conferences is to do the wandering eye routine, where you're speaking to the person, but, you know, you're looking to see if someone else is walking by that you need to grab. I absolutely was guilty of that early on in my career, and now I just like I try to be present with my kids, I try to be present with the person that I'm talking with at that time and giving them all your attention, whether it's, you know, the head of real estate for a retailer or a sign guy or a GC or, you know, someone brand new in the business asking me for some advice. But we owe it to that person for that time frame. Now, if they tend to go on and on and on, you absolutely respectfully need to, you know, this is a networking opportunity, you know, networking conference. I need to move on and meet some new people and respectfully move on from the conversation, but try to avoid having the wandering eye routine. On page 67, he talks about this, and I, you know, always tell my young rookies or my mentees, we have the ability in our business, which is unbelievable, which a lot of my friends in other industries don't have, is we have the ability to do homework in advance. So we now, right now, know the 3,000 people that are registered for the ICSC. We can go to the ICSC website, We can look and see who's registered, and we can email them for appointments, or we can see if they have booths, or we can see if they're speaking, if they're on the program. We can do our homework in advance. So, again, you're not going to do your homework on 50 people, but if there's one retailer that you've been trying to meet with that you really want to, you know, this is the show that you're going to sit down and have a quality conversation with them, do some homework on them in advance. Google them. A lot of times people are involved in charities or passions that once you Google them, it comes up. And you can talk to them intelligently about it and not just say, you know, God, isn't it hot out there in Orlando today? And, you know, some benign conversation. So see who's registered and then pick a few people that you really want to have a more productive meeting with, not just the 5 minutes in the booth, and learn more about them so if you get the opportunity, you're prepared. The other thing he talks about, which is absolutely a winner, is getting involved. If you're involved with the ICSC and conferences like this, it's extremely helpful. Early on in my career, I was involved, and you know, if you can get on the committee that plans the ICSC, or if you can help with, sometimes you get on the committee where you get to call the retailers and ask them to speak. So the ICSC provides so many different opportunities to get involved. You can get involved with Next Gen. You can get involved with
General Repair. So
ICSC.
This guy is telling us.
Whoever is speaking, if you guys could mute your line, that would be great. So getting involved in the ICSC, whether it's the Next Gen, the regional, the South Florida ID exchanges, or they have regional Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach, Tampa, and I think Katie Welch, who's on these calls a lot, you know, if you reach out to her and see if you can help out with some committees, obviously the more you're involved, the more people you're going to meet that way too. On page 70, he talks about this, and I've said this a lot, and people like have joked with me that I'm a stalker, but I'll wear that button proudly. He says, I wanted to meet a person, so I scouted out which rooms the people I wanted to meet were holding court in for the day, and I arranged my schedule so I could be there as they were walking in or out. It sounds a bit manipulative, but really it's just putting yourself in the right position at the right time. And I have done that. I needed to meet with the head of Winn-Dixie Real Estate for a project I was working on 4 years ago. And I was able to, you know, we were blessed with the ICSC pictures. You go on the website, you pull up the thing, you see what the guy looks like, because I had no idea. He was attending the conference. I could see him from a distance. And, you know, at lunchtime, I just, you know, happened to be walking in the room at the same time he was, and I ended up sitting at his table. And I got to sit there for 45 minutes with him and have a conversation. And I didn't talk about the business I needed to talk about with him at that point, but he knew me. And then that was a baseline for me to call him the following week and go up to Jacksonville and meet with him. So absolutely, you know, friendly stalking, I'm a big proponent of that. He talks about on page 72, there's no shortcuts. I can't tell you how many times I talk to young people in our business, and they're always looking for the shortcuts. There are no shortcuts. If you want to get ahead, you got to work hard. You got to do your preparation, and you're not just going to show up at a conference and expect to be successful. You've got to do some planning. A lot of times, people say, "Yeah, I went to the conference. I didn't know what to expect. It was my first one. They didn't have any mentors or leaders in their company. So, but now, you know, you guys, many of you have mentors, have leaders. They give you really good advice. Follow the good advice, because if you do that, an average show could be, you know, the show that takes your income to the next level. So don't be looking for shortcuts, and don't be thinking, oh, this is just another show. This is the biggest show of any person that works in Florida's career for the year, biggest show of the year. So take advantage of it and really work it. On page 76, he talks about lists and how important lists are, and he gives all kinds of ideas how to organize the lists. I'm obviously very involved at FSU, And one of the things, you know, we have this 40, best 40 under 40. I'm so excited when I read the bios and I learn about people that graduated from FSU that I didn't even know about that live in South Florida. So there's you know, the geographical list. When you travel, if you're going to go to Jacksonville to meet with Winn-Dixie, but you find out that here's two other retailers or companies that you want to meet with that are in Jacksonville, or here's a person that you met at a conference a couple years ago and you bonded, and, oh, yeah, they live in Jacksonville. So categorizing your lists to take advantage of different times when you are doing networking or planning meetings, and he talks a lot about that in that chapter, in around page 76. It's called Take Names. Excuse me. On page 81, I love this. He says, as with so many business dealings, that alone didn't do the deed. Serge, he's talking about a guy that's not calling him back, which a lot of you call me. How do I get these retailers to call me back? He says, Serge was busy, and I heard nothing back from him or his administrative assistant after several emails and phone calls. This isn't unusual. Frequently, people won't get back to you. You have to put your ego aside and persist in calling or writing, respectfully. And when you do finally connect, don't sabotage your efforts by expressing how annoyed you are that they didn't get back to you as quickly as you would have liked. Nor should you apologize for your persistence. Just dive in as if you caught him on the first call. Make it comfortable for everyone. Make it comfortable for everyone. Fabulous advice. Act like it's the first time you called and he picked right up. I think that sometimes our egos get in the way and we're like, oh, you know, or you see him at a conference, I've left you 14 messages. Not a good idea. You don't want to make them wrong. You want to make them right, and making them wrong does not help you. Okay, so before I continue, we're going to do our three free book giveaway this call. We're going to take the 1st, 17th, and 32nd person that emails Josie, or emails me, and Josie's looking at my emails. The book is called Uncensored Sales Strategies, and it's by the Mayflower Madam. It's a fun book. It's a fun read. I've already finished it. And I think that you guys will like it. So whoever emails me, the 1st, 17th, and 32nd will get either the book or the audio book or the download for, you know, one of your computer things that you, you know, your iPods, iPads, whatever. Okay, 91 and 92, we talk about the gatekeepers. Loved this. For those of you that are canvassing a lot, which I hope you all are, you know, they talk about, you know, respecting the gatekeeper's power. It says, always respect the gatekeeper's power. Treat them with the dignity they deserve. If you do, doors will open for you to even the most powerful decision makers. What does it mean to treat them with dignity? Acknowledge their help. Thank them by phone, flowers, or a note. You know, when I walk in, and some of you have heard this, when I go canvassing, I walk in, I don't care if the person's 12 or 80. I act like they're the owner. I don't ask them if they're the owner. I treat whoever's behind the desk like they're the owner, and I ask them, you know, are you interested in expanding or relocating, or, you know, I just try to get them interested. And 9 times out of 10, if they are not the owner, I've elevated them, or they believe that I think that they were the owner, and they, 9 times out of 10, give me the owner's not here, I'm not the owner. I said, oh, I'm so sorry, you're not the owner, and they say, but here's the owner's cell phone, or the owner will be in the store, you know, Tuesday at 4 o'clock. But if you walk in and you say, are you the owner? First of all, if they're not the owner, they're going to say, well, why doesn't he think I'm the owner? You know, what is it about me that they don't, he disrespects me? And if the guy is the owner, he's going to say, no, I'm not the owner, because he knows immediately that you're the salesperson. So treating the gatekeeper with respect, whether, you know, and in our case, mostly it's retail canvassing, but also with retail reps, many of them, you go right to their voicemail. But if there is a gatekeeper, getting their name, treating them respectfully, and not saying this is the 4th time I've called, because that's not going to get you anywhere. And too many people, you know, I have Josie, and I'll tell you what, when someone treats her disrespectfully, I hear about it, and I take that seriously. So we should all treat everyone with respect, but certainly the gatekeeper has a lot of power. A lot of power, and he has a whole chapter, and it's called Managing the Gatekeeper Artfully. So take a look at that. On page 95, He talks about there's a guy that he knows that's very successful, and he has a formula about calls, and he says he talks to at least 50 people each day. So this whole chapter is about setting goals for whatever your goals are. You know, he says have dinners at conferences, have small groups that meet. He says, I used to do this in my former company, have makeshift staff meetings. He says, I'll occasionally ask a few people to share a car ride with me, whether it's to a meeting, the airport, or lunch or dinner. And he says, I figure out ways how to triple my active working day through such multitasking. So, I mean, I had people say, let's walk down in the elevator on your way out, and we'd have a brief meeting. So, this whole chapter is about maximizing your workday and how to get the most out of your workday, and he has a couple different ideas in that. On page 103, he talks about maximizing your passions in networking. I know that there's a group of guys who play basketball, I think, once a week, and that they don't all play every week. I love the idea. I talk to them about it all the time. I just referred, actually, a young kid. I did a training rookie to Rockstar last week, and I said, what are your hobbies? And he says, I play basketball. So I hooked him up with this group. And, you know, there's some tenant reps. There's some landlord reps. They play in Miami, and they have a great time. And that group is excuse me, that group has become stronger over the years because of this relationship. He talks about dinner parties, having dinner parties in your home with a small group of 6 to 8 people. It's funny, when I was reading this, I've actually had 2 dinner parties at my home in the last 6 months with some of my friends not in the business and some of my friends in the business, and we had a great time, and it's relaxed, it's casual, it's personal. You know, that's why I like the retail bus tour so much. Because you're together for 8 hours on a bus all day long with, you know, 40 of your closest friends. But those people you're usually saying hi and bye to at ICSC's 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, and you don't really get an opportunity to spend quality time. And with the retail bus tour, you have an opportunity over 8 hours to, you could sit with 8 people for an hour and really propel that relationship and have that relationship be more productive in the future. So love anything that you guys can do, whether your passion is a book reading and a book club, whether, you know, we had our ropes course a few months ago, so the 12 of us that went on that formed a bond that we'll never, you know, forget, because you're doing things with smaller groups. He, at one place in the book, he talks about Ben Franklin and how Ben Franklin believed that every person should be a member of 3 small different groups. And, you know, I think that's great. I would not have the success I've had without my small, different, distinct groups with that I've had over the years in the industry. So think about what your passion is, and then start a group by yourself. I mean, one of the guys that I worked with, Brandon Wolf, just started, an after-hours networking cocktail party, and I think he picked people up in that geographic area he's working in. I'm not sure, but, obviously Hugh Chen's done the things that he's done. So what's your passion? And then see if other people in the industry share the passion, and then start something. Start it on your own. Don't wait for someone else to start it up for you. On 106, they talk about following up. He says, follow-up is the key to success in any field. And he says the follow-up that he remembers best are the ones he got first. So I'm good at following up. I'm not always the fastest. So I fall short on that. But he talks about follow-up or fail is the title of the chapter. And he talks about, he says, remember, this is critical. Don't remind them what they can do for you, but focus on what you might be able to do for them. It's about giving them a reason to want to follow up. And then he talks about clipping relevant articles, which we've talked about many times, which I do as much as possible, and handwritten thank you notes. Very unusual to get a handwritten thank you note in today's world, you know, because we're so email dominant. But when you do get a handwritten thank you note, it's really remembered. In the chapter called Conference Commando, which I love that, love that chapter. He talks about, are you a bowling ball or a pin at the conferences? If you're the ball, you walk or roll into the conference, event, or an organization, and you blow it apart. With a dash of bravado and ingenuity, you leave a positive impression in your wake, create friendships, and achieve the goals on your agenda. The pins, however, sit placidly by, waiting for something, anything, to happen to them. So the question is, are you going to be a bowling ball or are you going to be a pin? I hope you guys are all going to be bowling balls, because that's the way to do it. And that's how you're going to increase your income, which I think is the goal of everyone on the phone, to take your income to the next level. He said that when he worked at Deloitte, he said each Deloitte partner objective was to meet two people who were assigned to them from the guests that they knew would be attending. Each one was given one person as a primary target and then one as a secondary target. The basic goal remained simply to meet new people. And they prepared one-page bios of the people, and they said they would also try to sit at the same dinner table if they could. So these are all very successful people, and I think my goal is always to learn from successful people and take a few of ideas of what they're doing to be successful and copy that. He talks about mastering the deep bump, and he says the bump is the main weapon in your conference commando arsenal. He says the perfect bump is one that feels both fast and meaningful at the same time. He says, I call it the deep bump. Deep bumps are an effort to quickly make contact, establish enough of a connection to secure the next meeting and move on. He says creating a connection between any two people necessitates a certain level of intimacy. In 2 minutes, you need to look deeply into the other person's eyes and heart, listen intently, ask questions that go beyond just business, and reveal a little about yourself in a way that introduces some vulnerability. Yes, vulnerability, it's contagious, into the interaction. All things come together to create a genuine connection. So, and that's so important, I talk about all the time, is to be vulnerable, for especially the young people on the call. It's okay to go up to someone who's been in the business 20 years and say, you know, what do you contribute your success to? And sometimes our egos get in the way and we don't want to ask those questions. But people like to talk about themselves. They like to tell you about how they're successful. They love to give advice. So those of you that are on the call that are new, and even me 4 or 5 years ago before I went and started my own company, I used to ask that question, oh, yes, I've been in the business 18 years, but I've never owned my own business, or I've never done training, or, you know, so I ask people, you know, what their advices are, or what problems do they see in the industry that could be solved, or how do they think we could change things? Or it's okay to be vulnerable because people want to help. So the bumps. So he talks about the bumps. He talks about also they talk about first impressions, very important. That he says breaks are no time to take a break. He says that's where the real work happens. And he says Henry Kissinger said he knows that great networkers know how to make a memorable first impression. They see a room of people as a playing field. He says, remember to look sharp. Don't underestimate the importance of dressing well in places where you'll be noticed. You know, I know that it's so cool with young guys to have this 5 o'clock shadow, but, you know, you have to think about your audience. And if your audience, if you're looking for a job or you want to change careers or you want to change companies and you show up at a conference, and I know I'm going to sound old school here, but you show up and you haven't shaved, you know, maybe that's cool for nightlife, but I don't think that's cool for someone who wants to hire you, because probably the person that's doing the hiring is old like me, and we're not going to like that. So you guys need to shave. You need to have, you know, everyone should be, you know, unwrinkled and have a positive impression. And even though sometimes it says the conference is casual, dress casual, you know, if you don't know 100% of the people are going to be casual, and if you think that, you know, the head of the REIT that wants to interview you might be in a coat and tie, then I suggest The most embarrassing moment of my life was I went somewhere and I was completely underdressed. I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it, and I'll always overdress because you can always take off a jacket and take off a tie, but it's hard to dress up. So first impressions are crucial. He talks about sharing information, and in the new world, sharing is what it's all about. It's not about keeping the power or keeping the information and being secretive about it. We can all get a hold of the information. This morning, I had coffee with someone that is one of my neighborhood leasing agents, and we shared about vacancies, about tenants, about rental rates. I mean, that we can find it out anyway. Let's all be open about it, and I'm going to send her leads. She'll send me leads, and that's what it's all about. So I hope you guys are doing that with all of your neighborhood leasing agents. You should know every shopping center you lease. I hope you know the leasing agent on your other three corners and what their vacancies are and what their rental rates are. If you don't, you should. He talks about on page 127, don't be the ankle hugger or the smarmy eye darter. So we talked about the smarmy eye darter. He said, nothing will give you a bad rap in less time. He said, be Bill Clinton instead. If you spent only 30 seconds, if Bill Clinton spent only 30 seconds with someone, he made it 30 seconds of warmth and sincerity. And the ankle hugger is the total codependent that thinks the first person they meet is their BFF, and out of fear, they shadow that person for the entire conference. So we certainly don't want you to be either the smarmy eye darter or the ankle hugger. He talks about two very important subjects in anyone's life is their health and their career. And if you can help people out with helping out their kids, which I've done a few times, and I'll tell you that those people are my friends forever, or their health, that those are like the top two things in, I guess, the hierarchy of our world. So if you hear someone's got asthma or they're, you know, whatever, if you can give them any tips. I remember at a conference once someone told me that they had a bad cold and they were coughing all night. And I remember reading that when you cough all night, if you put Vicks Vapor Rub at the bottom of the soles of your feet and put on socks, you don't cough in the middle of the night. And I told the person this, and he went to the gift shop. He got the Vicks Vapor Rub, and then the next day he said, it worked. So, you know, just little things that you can help people out, and, you know, and don't be stingy with that. And maybe they think you're crazy, but, you know, they'll remember you, and that's what what is all about. Page 168, they talk about, I think he brings up, he said our first encounter was pure serendipity. This is another person he wanted to meet. I attended a luncheon for cabinet members at the Democratic National Convention in L.A. during President Clinton's last year of office. I spotted Jack, so this is a guy he wants to meet. It was Jack Valente, the chairman of the Motion Picture Association. He said, I spotted Jack among the attendees. When we all sat down for lunch, I made sure he and I were sitting next to each other. So I don't go that far. I don't sit next to the person, but I definitely sit at the same table. It's usually across, though. So there's that friendly stalker again. On page 172, he says that helping people, helping people is social arbitrage at work. He says the first key is don't wait to be asked, just do it. You know, if you're talking to someone and they say, you know, let's say you have an in at, you know, in Gainesville, and their kid is trying to get into Gainesville, and you have a way to pick up the phone right then and there and call or email and say, hey, maybe I can help you out. I know the person at admissions. Just do it. Don't wait for the person to ask you. And that's when he talks about on the next page, 174, he says, real power comes from being indispensable. Indispensability comes from being a switchboard, parceling out as much information, contacts, and goodwill to as many people in as many different worlds as possible. It's sort of career karma. You have to put yourself out to do things for other people. Things that require time, energy, and consideration. Career karma, my favorite. Those of you on the phone that know all about my canvassing karma. And then he says, he paraphrases Dale Carnegie. Dale Carnegie, you can be more successful in 2 months by becoming really interested in other people's success than you can in 2 years trying to get other people interested in your own success. How valuable is that? You can become more successful in 2 months by becoming really interested in other people's success than you can in 2 years trying to get other people interested in your own success. So, and everyone, I'm sure, on the call understands and believes the power of Dale Carnegie. He talks about, in Chapter 20, pinging all the time. Pinging is sending out emails, making phone calls. He talks about how, and he's got a whole system. This is a whole chapter of a system, which I, you know, suggest you guys read. And I do a little bit of this. I don't have a set up system like he does, but if I'm waiting in line somewhere, like let's say the carpool for my kids, I'll go through my contacts and come across the name. Oh, I haven't talked to this person. I haven't talked to Jeff for, you know, a month or two. Let me reach out and call him or send him an email. How's it going? Or how did that deal happen? Did you close that deal? Or how did your kid get into FSU? You know, how's your daughter doing in her first year? Or, so pinging and keeping the connections alive with a personal tidbit that you remember from your last conversation. But he has a whole system in here and a whole paragraph on pinging. And part of it talks about birthdays, remembering people's birthdays and sending them a birthday e-card or an action. I try to send cards to people I know whose birthdays, and they really appreciate it. They go, oh, I can't believe you remembered my birthday. Additionally, traveling, we talked about earlier, if you're going to New York for the ICSE, who else in New York that may not be going to the ICSE, you know, can you stop by and see and say hi to? Take advantage of the time and make it productive. Being interesting. I tell you guys, till you know I'm blue in the face about, I'm a big reader. I try to read as many newspapers as possible. I try to do it in the morning because inevitably I have a lunch meeting where they're talking about, you know, how the girls, you know, beat Brazil in the World Cup, or something about Casey Anthony trial, or something about the new Dade County mayor. Or if I didn't read, I would be out of the loop when these conversations would come up. And I don't like feeling that way. I don't like feeling out of the loop. I like to be in the loop. And I like to give my opinion about stuff that I've read. I mean, there was an article last week in the Wall Street Journal about how, I think it was the state of Arizona, is going to get rid of handwriting in class for the elementary students. And it was really controversial article. I've already had 3 conversations about this article for other people that are at the same place I am in life with, you know, 8, 10, 12-year-old kids, and what we think about that article. And all those people read the article, too. They're reading the journal, and, you know, what do you think about that article when you're sitting waiting for a meeting to start, you know, talking about topics that are in the newspaper? It shows that you're well-read and intelligent, so I highly, highly, highly encourage it. I got a Globe Street notification this morning about a friend of ours in Miami that did a big deal, United Trust Fund. I was able to send an email to him congratulating him. You know, it's all that stuff is so important to keep your relationships going. On page 214, they talk about, and this is so true, it's so true in my life, there's no better way to learn something and become an expert at it than to teach it. So, you know, take out a friend, someone new in the business, whether they work with your company or not, and drive around certain markets with them. You'll learn the market as you're sharing the market information with them. You'll learn things about the market as well. You know, give some advice to a younger person in your firm or just a friend, maybe someone who graduated from the same university as you. Give them some advice about how to prepare for the Orlando Convention. By you teaching, you will be learning. And I'm so such a believer on that. And I, through the teaching I've done, I continue to learn, which I love to learn, so that's a good thing that I like. He talks about excuses. He talked about a guy that wanted his advice. And he says, when I made some suggestions about how he goes from creating a presence in his new big company that he works for, The guy says, that sort of thing can't be done at a big consulting company. The author says, I thought my head was going to explode. I think he probably thought so too. He said, Kevin, that's just self-defeating crap. From the first day I joined Deloitte, that's a pretty large consulting firm, right? I went out of my way to take on projects that no one wanted and initiated projects no one thought of doing. I emailed my boss and sometimes my boss's boss with my new ideas. And I did it almost every day. What's the worst thing that could happen? I get fired from a job that I didn't like anyway. Alternatively, I made the effort to create the job, regardless of where it was, that I thought would make me very happy. And that's what happened. You know, he was at Deloitte, and he didn't like the accounting part of it, and he wanted to become more of the new business marketing. And he started emailing his boss about this idea, that idea, that, and obviously not all the ideas his boss acknowledged, but a few of them he did, and he ended up becoming the marketing new business person at Deloitte. So, you know, we can create, when I first started at, in this business and I was a rookie, I said, I think we should have a property in Boca. And, my boss said, well, go find one. And I did. And then, we might not have gotten that property, but we got another property. And I said, we need a property in Aventura. And it's good to have bosses who listen to you and want you to be promoted and want you to excel and advance. So, and if you're not in that situation, then you'll learn that too. But if you're creative and you come up with ideas, keep putting those ideas out. But don't walk into a situation and say, this stinks and I can't do anything about it, because that's self-defeating and you're full of excuses. And we're all better than that. And we don't need to be creating excuses for ourselves. On page 230, they talk about never ask for more pay until after you've been doing the job successfully and become invaluable. So important. So important, where people have come to me in my prior life and said, I think I deserve a raise. Or, come to the person. It's kind of like what I say to you guys when you say, my rents are too high. My owner tells me to quote 30, and I think the market's 22. And what I say is, go do a market study and ask your friends in your neighborhood, how many deals have they done in the last 12 months? Create a story, create the evidence, then go take it to your boss and say, look, the market is, this guy's done 3 deals in the last 6 months because his rent's at 20. These three centers haven't done any deals in the last 6 months and their rents are at 30. So if you want me to quote 30, I can do that, but here's the evidence. And if you have really good relationships with your neighborhood leasing agents, you're going to get the true information, and you'll be able to plead a case for yourself. The same thing if you want a raise. If you've done the work and you keep the notes and you go in and talk to your boss and say, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this, I believe that if you're entitled, you'll get a raise. But don't go in and say, I think I should get a raise, and then I'll do the job. So he talks about that in page 230. We have 10 more minutes, and then we're going to be giving away the book. So we have send in some more emails, and I'll be able to give the 3 books away. On page 232, he talks about Donald Trump and how what a brand this guy has made for himself. And he says, look, Trump is a talented developer, but then so are a lot of other people. The difference is he promotes himself. He said, the fact is that those people who are known beyond the walls of their own cubicle have greater value. Okay, I can't think of anyone more that defines that than Hugh Chen. They find jobs more easily. They usually rise up the corporate ladder faster, and their networks begin to grow without much heavy lifting. So you got to get out there, and people got to know who you are. And the more people that know you, that beyond the walls of their own cubicle have greater value. I loved that. I thought that was fabulous. And the person that popped into my head when I read that was Hugh. And I think many of you on the call know who Hugh is. On 270, or 265, they talk about what I said earlier, start your own groups. He said, Ben Franklin says, it said, Franklin's autobiography tells us that every man should be a part of a social group, if not three. He believed that a group of like-minded, achievement-oriented individuals could dramatically leverage each other's success to do things otherwise impossible. Love that. So look at if you're not a part of one group, if not three, you know, do you play on that the group that plays basketball? Are you a group of women that go have dinner once a quarter? You know, are you, whatever your hobby is, have a dinner party at your home, you know, and invite six or eight people in the industry. You know, be part of a Gator group, a Knoll group, a Hurricane group, you know, anything that like-minded people. You know, Florida State, and I know that Gainesville, we have our real estate conferences every year, you know, and we usually do it around a football weekend. We have 600 people that are FSU alumni that are in the real estate business. How great is that? So now we have two connections, real estate and FSU. So mentors, mentees. If you don't have a mentor, you should have one, no matter at what stage in your life. You know, here is this famous author. He's done unbelievable things, very successful, been, you know, the leader, has been a president of companies, owns his own companies, the head marketing, and, you know, he's always reaching and getting, you know, his circle of influence and reaching for people he hasn't met yet that he wants to meet, that he would love for them to be his mentor. And he says, you know, I keep asking people. Some people say yes and some people say no. Don't be afraid to ask. He said, he also said, which is my dad, you know, gave me this advice. He said, I remember that my mother and father had told me to speak less in such situations. The less you say, the more likely you'll hear. My dad's thing was, you know, God gave you two ears and one mouth. You're supposed to listen twice as much as you speak. You know, if you say, I want to go have coffee with my mentor, make sure that you're asking questions, but they're doing most of the talking. If you're there trying to show them how important you are, you're not going to learn anything. 289, loved this on 289. Who do you know that you have refrigerator rights? He said that there's a book out there called Refrigerator Rights, Creating Connections and Restoring Relationships. He says, how many people can walk into your home and just open up the fridge and help themselves? He said, not many. He said, people need more refrigerator right relationships. It's so funny. I was at a friend of mine's house. She's the real estate rep for Starbucks, and she's a good friend. And my kids were over there playing with her kids, and she ran out. She had to go to a meeting, and I was just hanging out in her house waiting. I was waiting for something to happen, and I'm starving. I'm like, well, I'm just going to go, you know, open her refrigerator and see what she's got. And I remember she came home. I texted her, I'm in your refrigerator getting pizza from last night. And, you know, I was a little worried, like, was she going to be mad that I was in her refrigerator? But I kind of thought that she wasn't going to be mad, and I was right, she wasn't. But I read that, and right after that happened, and I thought, very interesting, how many people do we have in our life that we wouldn't have a problem with them doing it in our home, and that we could go in their home and do it? Just very, very thought-provoking. A good question to ask at a dinner table. How many people do you have refrigerator rights through? 297, he talks about making a difference. And, you know, he says, what's your passion? What gives you pleasure? And how can you make a difference? He said, living a connected life leads one to take a different view. Life is less a quest than a quilt. He says, we find meaning, love, and prosperity through the process of stitching together our bold attempts to help others find their own way in their lives, helping others find their own way in their lives. The relationships we weave become an exquisite and endless pattern. So he says, what will be the legacy of your own quilt? How will you be remembered? These questions are potent measuring sticks for anyone who cares about making a difference and not just making a living. He says, giving begets giving. And abundance leads to even more abundance. He says, in the end, you know, we can't do it alone. We're all in this together, so make your quilt count. So I hope you guys enjoyed this book. I really enjoyed it, and I really encourage you to get it because I'm only touching, you know, brief parts of especially like the Conference Commando chapter, the Ping chapter, the Gatekeeper chapter. I just love the whole thing. I have, for those of you that want some goals, you know, mid-year goals checkup, I have a thing. You can go to my website and we can set up a time and I can help you check and see how you're doing for 2011. And the next book, like I said, is Uncensored Sales Strategies. It's very fun, and it's written by the Mayflower Madam. So we're going a little off the path here, but I think that you guys will all enjoy it. And the three books are going out to today, Darren Whalen, Tony Pavley, and Adam Lustig. And I think Adam's birthday was last week, so there's a good birthday present for you. So I hope you guys had a great time. I hope you learned a lot, and I will see you next month, which will only be a couple weeks before ICSE. So do your prep now and don't wait for the last minute, please, and I'll look forward to seeing you guys there, and you can tell me all about the success you had in your prior preparation. Take care. Have a happy summer. Bye-bye.